welcome back to another episode of Talks About Tech Weekly. This is Talks About Tech Weekly, episode 109 today, recorded on Saturday, the 26th of July, 2014. You're very welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining me for this episode of Talks About Tech Weekly. My name is Micah McAndrew. I am the host of the show. And usually you'll probably be expecting Kevin McAndrew, my brother, to be joining me as he does in every episode. But this week I'm going alone because for this episode, I'm going to be doing something a little bit different. This time I'm going to be interviewing Harry McCann. I recorded an interview earlier on this week, so I'm going to be playing that back on the episode. Now, just to kind of preface this, Harry is a young entrepreneur. He's the founder of KidTech, as well as the founder and creator of the Digital Youth Council. And in the interview, we talk a lot about the Digital Youth Council, about KidTech. We talk a lot about technology and education, technology in the education system. And we also kind of talk about a little bit about entrepreneurship in Ireland, a little bit about setting up your own business. So I hope you enjoy the interview. The interview is about 50 minutes in length, and then I'll come back at the end of the show to close the show after the interview. So without further delay, here's the interview with Harry. So I'm here with Harry McCann from KidTech, and today we're going to talk a little bit about technology in the classroom and technology in education. So on the podcast, we like to talk a lot about technology in education. So today we're just going to talk a little bit about that. Harry, thank you very much for joining me for this episode of Talks About Tech Weekly.
No problem, Michael. How are you?
I'm very good. So to start off, could you just tell me a little bit about what you do at KidTech and what you do with your business?
Sure, no problem. So I started up KidTech in November 2013 with the aim to teach the next generation tech. So we do that now for the last 8 months with using courses to teach everything from app development, web design, everything and anything to do with computers, basically. We usually run them over 10-week courses. And what happens is we explain the background of being an app developer and then different ideas of what they could do. And then after 5 weeks or so of explaining what they need to do and what it is, then they actually go ahead and build it. So we give them all the resources necessary to do so. And then by the end of the 10 weeks, they usually have a product, or if not, the foundations of a product. We've been running that now for the last 8 months successfully. And we hope by the end of the year to have taught 600 kids worldwide. Well, in Ireland.
Wow. I really love that, because you don't just do a theory course, but you also do a practical side to learning as well. And you make sure that your students have a finished product by the end of the course. I really do like that. Sorry, go ahead.
I totally agree with you. I do think it's a problem with some courses and with a lot of programs, is that you can tell the kids as much as you like, and you can stand in front of a classroom. And it's probably one of the biggest problems with formal learning, is that people stand in front of a classroom and talk and talk and talk, and they could talk for as long as they want, and then the kids go home and they still don't know what to do. So you really do need to have them doing something practically, so they know when they go home or when they're doing the future how to do it and how to do it properly, because they've done it before.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And even students coming out of college, they don't have any work experience, and they're going into the workplace without knowing how exactly to work as a team and all that kind of stuff as well. So it is a big issue in education at the moment.
Most definitely.
Harry, can I ask you how it all got started for you? And tell us a story about how you got started and how it basically brought you to where you are today.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Well, when I started in October, I originally came up with the idea. And I found myself with a lot of free time come October due to I injured my leg. So I was kind of in this place and I couldn't move a lot. So I had my computer in front of me and I was hoping to start a project. And I thought, what did I care most about? And what really irritated me that wasn't being offered to everybody? And then the one thing that annoyed me, because I was an awful tech geek, and I admit that I'm a tech geek, I'm a complete tech geek. And
like myself.
I think a lot of us are. And to be honest, I'm not ashamed to be a tech geek. But what happened was, I was sitting there and I was like, do you know what? I want to start teaching people technology. It's something I was good at, and it was something that just wasn't being offered in the education system in Ireland, and it's not being offered in a lot of places. So what I did was I started up the company, I put down a business idea, I researched it, I seen was there anything like it, and there was a few things I could, obviously there's the Coder Dojo out there and there was a few other places, but I decided what I could do and how I could offer better than these places. So come November, I had a premises rented, I had 25 to 30 kids, and I had written my program. So we did the program for 10 weeks, ran into the new year, and it went fantastically. It went really, really well. There was good feedback from people, and I decided to take it that bit further. We spoke to people like Nora Casey, the former Dragon from Dragon's Den. We had interest from people like BlackBerry, who sent us over equipment, the online advertisement company VideoAd, and it really just took off from there. People really took the idea of teaching the kids technology, because there was really the realization that technology is such a big part of our everyday life. So it grew, and it grew very, very big, very, very quick, in the case that we were going from teaching 25 kids with the aim to teach 600 by the end of this year alone. And we're only 8 months into business. We had interest from ministers, we had interest from big public profiles, and it went fantastically. I spoke at a conference that you actually attended, Michael, and Excited. And then other conferences like the Coder Dojo and different places like that. But it was amazing, because it's almost like the minute we started that, people suddenly realized that, wow, that's what we needed, was something to teach the next generation tech. And that's exactly what we're doing. Right. And we're growing by the day, literally. So it's fantastic.
That's brilliant. So just going back to kind of where it all started, how did you become the tech geek you are today?
A tech geek.
Can I call you a tech geek?
Yes, is that okay? You can. I'm proud to call
Loud and proud, as they say. Geek. That's good.
Loud and proud. How did I get involved in technology? Well, I was always kind of a techie in a way. When we had our first house computer, and obviously when I was growing up, when I was 4 or 5, technology has only come big in the last few years.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, we had our PC at home, and I kind of played around with that a bit. And then obviously we came into the ideas of mobile phones and the Androids and the Apple phones and everything like that. And then I grew up with those around me. But I just had such an interest for how it worked. I was always kind of looked past the whole idea of it just turning on and working. I wanted to know how it done that. And then I ended up getting to the end of coding. And then my brother started his computer science degree in DCU. And then he kind of gave me some of his knowledge of coding and programming. And it kind of went from there. I started at the age of 12 or 13 at coding. And then I joined the Coder Dojo movement. And I became a mentor there. And it just kind of went from there. And now I'm an honorary tech geek.
So that's good. So there was kind of technology kind of in your family. You kind of grew up with a lot of technology, with your brother doing the computer science degree. And you know, I did Coder Dojo as well, so we kind of have a similar path that way.
That's
kind of how I got started in kind of web design, because I learned HTML there. And so that's really, really interesting. So just moving along to back to kid tech again, what exactly was there any one kind of a person who kind of inspired you, or how did the idea exactly come? Was there one person in particular that would have inspired this kind of an idea?
Well, I was really inspired actually by a movement I noticed on. I joined Twitter, and as I said, yourself, you're on Twitter yourself, and you come across amazing people every day.
Yeah.
And there was this one particular movement that I was really interested in, and it started in the UK in September 2013, and it was amazing. And I literally got obsessed with the idea. I thought it was just so good. Was ThinkSpace, and ThinkSpace offer unique workplaces in the class, in schools in the UK, to the rooms almost like Google headquarters and like Twitter headquarters, and they're really amazing rooms with top technology. And these three guys set it up. I know two of them well, was James Anderson and Jordan Early, and then there was Carmen, and there was a few of them anyway. But it was really the three guys. They were 16 or 17 at the time, or 16 at the time, I think, 15 and 16 at the time. And when I seen that it was possible to do something like that at such a young age, it really inspired me to go, well, people are accepting this day and age that people of a young age can actually do more than they could before. And when I seen these three guys doing this movement, and they had so many big profile people involved, they met Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, and they met loads and loads of people. And when I really seen that could happen, I they were kind of my inspiration as such. And I speak to James now. James is a good friend of mine, and so is Jordan. And it really helpful having them along. So it was really them that inspired me to start up Kid Tech.
Right, that's really interesting. That brings me along to the next question, which is kind of the challenges that you had setting up Kid Tech. And the fact that you are so young, you're 15 years of age, is that right?
Yeah.
The fact that you were 15 years of age and you're setting up your own business, was there a lot of, did you have a lot of challenges setting that up? Do you feel that it was much more challenging, the fact of your age?
Well, it's funny actually, as you say that, and it's something that James Anderson, the guy who set up ThinkSpace, and he was saying that he meets with people all the time, and he often has meetings with people like Skype and different other organizations like that. And it really is amazing, because I've met some high profile people, as I say, I met Noor Casey, I've met various other people like that. And when you meet with them, it's very funny, because people respect your opinions, even at such a young age. Now, when I originally started out, you really do need to become that kind of person. You need to be on Twitter. You need to be active like that, so people know who you are and know what you do, so they respect your opinion.
Right.
And I really found that was key to starting up, was to make sure that people understood what you were doing and what you stood for, so that they could either respect you or not respect what you're doing. And you really need to show them, you need to prove to them that no matter, even if you are 15, that you can be as good as someone who's 30 or 40 who has had years and years of experience. Starting out, though, with the company was tough, even with all the support and help that I had. It took a lot of work. I was in my junior cert year, so it's relatively hard to start up a company. But yeah, it just took a lot of determination and long hours sitting behind the computer to do it. But really, if anybody wanted to do it, they could do it. They just need to sit down and say to themselves that they can do it, and they will, most definitely.
Right, yeah. So very, very interesting stuff. Now, I definitely agree with you about age and setting up a business so young, is because I've been trying to do it myself, is that if you show people that you have the knowledge, you have the same knowledge as someone who is much older than you, people will listen. And I think it's becoming a lot easier these days. I think the older generation of people are realizing that these young people, they have access to the internet now, and they can basically learn whatever they want. They don't have to stick their heads in books and go to courses, and as in like classroom-based courses, and just sit in a classroom just to learn stuff. They can use the internet. They can go to special courses like the courses that you're doing now outside of the classroom, as well as courses like Coder Dojo to learn. And although I have come across a few people who are very, very narrow-minded, and they see young people as just uneducated people, the majority of people, I believe, really, really do embrace young entrepreneurs and young business people.
Most definitely.
Yeah, I definitely do believe that. Now, what was the biggest challenge for you setting up Kid Tech?
Time. Finding the time to do it was a big thing. As I said, I was in my junior cert year, and I was only 15 in September, and I started in November. So I was really kind of young, and I'd never done anything like it before either, would be another big thing. So it was kind of finding the time between school and setting up a business was the hard part. Like, I was in school in my junior cert year from 9 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock. And when you find, you need to really push yourself to spend those hours afterwards, after school, to go and sit down and actually work it out and send emails. You need to just make sure that you find a happy middle between school and work. And that if you don't take that time, and if you don't use it wisely, then it just won't happen for you. But the time is definitely a big part of setting it up.
Yeah, it's always extremely difficult to find enough time to do everything that you want to do. I would completely agree with you on that. So I kind of want to get more in depth about what exactly you do in Kid Tech. Could you explain exactly how the courses work? So, like, if I wanted to sign up for one of your courses now, how could I do that?
Well, we're working on our website at the moment. So that will be up now, hopefully in the next month or two. So that will have an online application site. So what you do is you can go on, you can book your course, and you can pay for it all by credit card, and then we send you a confirmation email, and you can come with that to the courses. Cool. But at the moment, what we're doing is basically we advertise it over Twitter and Facebook, and then or various social networking sites and newspapers. And what happens is you can come in. You usually have to pre-book by email or by phone, and you come in. The child stays with us for usually an hour to 2 hours a week. And what we do is we bring them in for the first week, and we explain to them what we'll be doing for the 10 weeks. It's usually 10 weeks, as I said. It's probably the best time to get it done. But what happens is we bring them in the first day. We explain to them what we'll be doing for the 10 weeks and what they'll finish with. So the skills they'll have, what they'll finish, what the product they'll finish with, and then how they can move on from there. So in the first week, after explaining that, we go on to the second week. And the second week, we'll explain to them, let's say we're doing app development. We'll explain the different kind of app developers and what their different jobs is in developing an app, because some are graphic designers, some are coders, different bits and pieces like that. So we explain to them the different jobs involved. Then we'll look at a few different people who developed apps and what they've done primarily in it. So if somebody developed Flappy Birds or different things like that, and we look at the ideas behind them. Then we go on to the third week, and we explain how they'd actually go about building the app. So we'd explain to them the code needed or the design needed, etc. Mm-hmm. And then in the fourth week, we'd put them into groups, and the groups would discuss an idea. So discuss from what they learned in the first few weeks, what they'd like to do. And then in the fifth week, we kick off with the developing. So over the 5 weeks, they aren't completely on their own. We're there the whole time. There'd be usually myself and another person, or sometimes just myself, depending on the size of the group. We'd help them along. If they needed help, they'd call us. But we like to leave them and see if they can do it themselves for a while, and then we check up on them consistently. They present what they've done so far at the end of every single week. And then by the end of it, if they don't have a finished product, they'll have the start of a product. And the idea would be that they're continuously learning throughout the process, and they're learning different skills. Like even at the end of every class, being able to stand up and tell what you've done, you're able to present your idea, and you're able to understand your idea fully. Because if you can explain it to somebody else, you know it yourself. And after the 10 weeks, when it comes to week 10, they stand up, and usually their parents would be there, or else they can just stand up in front of the whole class and they present their product and how they built it. And if they can do that properly, and which we 100% make sure they can, if they can explain what they use and how they could do in the future, then they've come out of the course with the skills needed. And then we tell them, well, look, you can come back and do the next course that will teach you how to do this, so that you'll have this skill and this skill. And then you can continuously move on. But we do, we definitely encourage an open atmosphere. It's informal learning. And it really is that you can bring your phone, you can bring your tablet, you can bring your laptop, and you can bring whatever you like to learn. And it's full of conversation. And it's not just a teacher at the top of a classroom dictating what to do. It's really that you go and learn for yourself. And if you need help, we're there. We'll explain at the start what to do. But after that, you're there for yourself, and that you can take out your phone and you can Google something. And if you can't find it, you can ask us. But it's great. I do think it's a good idea, and especially for formal learning at the moment, considering the education system, I do think is very of a poor standard because it's too formal. But yeah, that's exactly what we do.
Right. Yeah, I really, really love the fact that you get your students to present their work as well, because presentation skills are like extremely important. They're some of the most important skills you could possibly have in life. And you're most not, definitely. I love the way that you're not only teaching technology skills and technology development, but you're also teaching presentation skills and how to present in front of a class, in front of a large audience. I really, yeah, really love that.
It's important. I think it is very important. You know, if anyone who's ever attended an event, or I know myself from doing various events over the last few months, to be able to stand up and explain what you've done and what you're doing is a skill that very few people have. And I think it's something we do tend to push on our courses, because it's all well and good having a product, but not being able to explain what your product is useless having the product. So that's what Absolutely. We really do hope to get out to them, is that if you can present your work, no matter what kind of work it is, as long as you can explain it, it's as good. So,
I agree. So what kind of courses do you provide and offer at the moment for people who are looking to sign up?
Lots and lots. Computer game developments, app design, app developments, web design, web developments, ethical hacking.
Ooh, I like that one. Yes. Could you explain a little bit more about ethical hacking?
Not the person to ask, unfortunately, about that. Ethical hacking would be my co-founder. Well, he's the lead developer for KidTech, is an ethical hacker himself.
Right.
So, now, as far as ethical hacking comes, I am no clue about it, but he takes full charge of ethical hacking in the case of that. But it does sound amazing, I must admit. Now, if he's got, we hope to do an ethical hacking course soon, so I'll probably actually take the course myself when he's giving it to see.
But, that is
very interesting. It is, and it's something that I think is not taught anywhere else.
No.
Because it's seen as wrong in a way, but it's really not. It's a fantastic skill to be able to do. But yeah, no, it is. It's a very good one. What else do we have? We do have an awful lot. They are our main ones, though. The apps are very big, and people are very keen on apps, websites, and games as well. Kids love games, especially since the release of Minecraft.
Right.
Kids are over the moon with trying to build a game like Minecraft.
Yeah.
But there are three big ones with the apps, web design, and computer game development.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a little bit of a technology-based question here about applications and that kind of thing. Apps they've really become very, very popular since the iPhone released their app store in 2008 when Steve Jobs said, look, we're going to open this app store. It's going to be really, really low cost for developers to be able to make apps. Do you think that apps, there's still an opportunity there in apps? Because if you look at the app stores, there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of apps out there. Do you think there's still opportunity for a developer to be able to make money from an app?
Most definitely, yeah. I really think it depends on the idea. The idea has to be original. I always say this to everybody, but it has to be simple. An app has to be a simple design, and I think it's something Apple do fantastically. I don't have an Apple device myself, but I there's an iPad in my household, and there's other various devices like that. But when you look at an iPad, and I think it's always something that an app developer should look at, is simplicity. You should be able to look at an app and see what you need to get from the app. So whether it's a Google Maps or whatever it is, you should be able to look at it and find the information you need.
Right.
And I think some app developers really understand the idea of simplicity is they go over the top and they make the idea too complicated. And I really think if something's complicated to use, it's not an app.
Right.
It's just not an app. I think it defeats the purpose of. But there's definitely money in it. As long as you have the idea, though, it really depends on the idea. Like, as you've seen, Flappy Birds over the last few months it was ridiculous how many people seen something so simple and thought it was so good, because it was very good. Idea. I'm sure if he paid I'm sure if he put it on the store for 99 cents, that people would have paid 99 cents for it.
Right.
And you know, 99 cents mightn't seem much, but if 2 million people buy it for 99 cents,
yep.
And you make a bit of money. But yeah, definitely, I don't think anybody should be turning off the app store right now. If you think you have a good idea for an app, there's definitely still the space for the next few years anyway. I definitely think, though, after a while, it probably will become a bit loaded with apps that people won't use.
Mm. So coming back to KidTech, where are you currently holding the courses? Are there multiple places around the country that you are doing these courses, or where are you based?
We do hope to open a second center or a lab somewhere in Dublin. Now, currently we're just outside of Dublin, so we're in Kildare.
Okay.
Now, we don't have one fixed position at the moment because we don't own premises. We rent premises in Kildare. So that's where we run it now, in Kildare. It's actually in just outside of Naas in Kildare.
Yeah, I know Naas well.
Yeah, but that's, like, I think we hope to, as we get bigger. As I said, we've only been doing it 8 months and we have been growing. We have been growing in the case, but we don't actually, and I think it's something that needs to be stressed a lot to people. We do charge for our courses, but we don't charge a lot of money. It covers our costs, yep. Basically. So the only possible way we get premises is if we got funding or investment, which hopefully we will get very soon. And we're in talks as such about that. But it's, other than that, we are sticking in the one location for this moment in time.
Right. And was there a was it challenging getting equipment for teaching students as well? Because would you need computers and that kind of thing, or do students bring their own computers, or how exactly does that work in terms of equipment?
Well, the amazing thing now is, and it's funny, every child has either a tablet or a computer.
Right. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Even I meet 7 or 8 year olds who have their own laptop, and so every child usually does have their own computer. So we usually rent out a computer lab anyway. So yeah, if the computer lab has all the computers there, but most of the kids bring their own laptops because all the computer lab is full of PCs, but they all usually bring their own equipment. Software, we usually tend to get software from different companies free of charge. And then we have things like projectors, but the projector it was kind of an investment. We bought the projector and we bought different things along the way.
Yeah.
If there's any money left over after a 10-week course, we invest the money in, let's say, a projector or different software. So we kind of built it up over 8 months.
So I'm going to ask you a little bit about another project that you've recently been involved with, and that is the creation of the Digital Youth Council Ireland. Could you tell me a bit about the Digital Youth Council and your involvement in it?
Yeah, no problem. It was an idea I came up with in June 2014, so only very recently. What I thought about was, and I met a lot of people over the last few months in different conferences and events, and I met a lot of people my and your age, really, basically. Yeah. 12 to 17, and some amazing young developers, designers, people who own businesses, and award winners. And there was an awful lot of them. And I felt that all these had such good views and opinions, and they just weren't being heard. Nobody was listening as such, unless you went to an event and somebody was listening there. But after you express your opinion, nothing was coming of it. So I came up with the Digital Youth Council. So we put the 12 people, I picked 12 of the top young people in technology in Ireland. So we have people like Jordan Casey from Casey Games. We have five young scientists, the BT Young Scientist competition. Mm-hmm. We have 2 Aircom award winners, the Junior Spider award winners. We've an awful lot of people who have amazing ideas and who have won various awards. So these 12 people will meet once a month, starting on the 25th of August in Dublin at Lone, I think. From our places like that in the Science Gallery, the Digital Hub, the ICHEC. And for the meeting, they'll spend 3 or 4 hours in the room or in very different rooms doing different things, discussing technology, discussing the digital agenda, ICT in Ireland and the EU, and various other things involved with that. They'll also go to events, schools and various other places and gather the opinions of young people in young people and what they feel about technology and ICT. And then when they gather all these views and put them all together, they'll discuss them and they'll pick the one idea that they thought, or the 2 or 3 ideas that they thought came up an awful lot, and they'll express these views and opinions to people in IT companies or in big tech companies, and then to people in the EU Commission and the state. So hopefully that if there's an idea that maybe the state think we really could do an IT or an ICT, then hopefully we go forward with that idea. But that's the idea at the moment.
I really, really think this is a fantastic idea, Harry. You know, it can be... the thing is that young people are the people of the future, and really... what's happening now is what's going to affect people, young people, the current generation of young people now in the future. So I think it's very, very important that young people have a voice as to what they think about, you know, future technologies and all that kind of stuff. I think that is absolutely fantastic. And what you're doing is really, really great for giving young people a voice in technology and education and all that kind of stuff. I think that is absolutely fantastic, Harry.
Thank you very much.
What is your kind of position in Digital Youth Council? Have you founded it yourself, or
I founded it. We could almost say co-founded it with 2 other people. There's Kieran Cannon, the former Minister for Skills and Learning, mm-hmm. and then there was Bernard Kirk, the director of the Galway Education Centre.
Right.
I kind of had the idea, and then I shared it with Kieran Cannon and then with Bernard Kirk, and they liked the idea, so they...
That is a great, great idea.
You know, along the way, which...
I think it's great that you have the support of people like Kieran Cannon and Bernard Kirk, who really, really can help the council be heard in the Irish government as well as the European Parliament. I think that is absolutely fantastic that you've gotten the support of those people as well.
Yeah, they're great people. In fairness, I must admit it's been fantastic, the amount of help we've had. I spoke to the new Minister for Education this morning, and I spoke to a few of our colleagues. And to be honest, I must thank a lot of people for their help. And people are very generous and very good. And Bernard Kirk and Kieran Cannon have been fantastic. And even the new Minister for Education, Jan O'Sullivan, mm-hmm. has been very helpful so far. And even the EU Commission. And I think it's very important that people in those positions are go to younger people and that hear the views and opinions of younger people. And
Absolutely.
It's really what we try to get out of this council. And as you said, young people are our future. And it's been said an awful lot recently is young people are our future. So we need to listen to those young people so that they can path their way to the future and hopefully make it as best as possible for them.
Absolutely, Harry. And if there's anything that I can do to help the Digital Youth Council, please do let me know as well, because I think it's a fantastic idea and I'll support it all the way as well.
Most definitely. Thank you very much, Michael.
No problem. So, Harry, you're teaching children how to use technology outside of the classroom. I'm going to ask you what your opinion is on what has to be done in the classroom to teach children about technology.
Well, it's not an easy answer.
It's
not what funny enough it, in theory for me it is. I've been told once or twice I could almost be the Minister for Education, and to be honest, if I was the Minister for Education, I would probably just scrap the whole idea current, to be honest. I think the whole idea of the Irish education system at second level and first level's all right, second level is appalling. I set the junior cert recently and I didn't like the whole structure to the first 3 years. There was no really project-based work. There was nothing at all. It was basically learn off what you've done for the last 3 years, sit down for an exam for 2 or 3 hours, and then hope that you memorized everything off the top of your head. And I could honestly say now everything I memorized off the top of my head 3 months ago or 2 months ago, that I couldn't remember half of it. It was because basically you're rhyming off what you had been just put in your head for the last month or two or whatever. You spent the year doing it, basically just learning off everything you've done.
Yep.
I really think though the new juniors right now is a good opportunity. It's a project-based work, so the kids are constantly learning and they're constantly being assessed on their learning. It's important because a lot of people don't do well in exams, even though they might know the material and they might know the work. It's a very stressful moment to put somebody in is sitting in an exam center full of quietness for 3 or 4 hours in the one spot. It's very hard for somebody, especially of a young age. I think a lot more IT needs to be put into the system. I'm sure you'll agree with me on that one. There needs to be more tablets and there needs to be phones and laptops. Every school at the moment has fibre optic broadband to an unbelievable level. It was a big investment put in by the EU and the Irish State Department. So every school is Wi-Fi capable and has enough to facilitate for everybody. So there's no reason why people couldn't bring their phones or tablets in the classrooms and be sitting there working away on those or checking stuff out. What else needs to be done? The leaving cert as well. I think that's extremely unfair, especially if the junior cert is, you know, rhyming everything off for the last 6 years and sitting down, which does depend on your further education and maybe your further work life. I think, now I wouldn't know much about it, as I said, I haven't set the leaving cert, but I do think it's very unfair. But that's, I would definitely encourage more IT and more project-based learning. And as I said, less formal teaching. I really think that you achieve nothing by standing in front of a classroom for 40 minutes or an hour and dictating. I really think it needs to be more class discussions, more projects, more, you know, interaction with the teacher and the students rather than the teacher standing at the top of the classroom and constantly telling you what they need done.
Right.
I'm sure a lot of people agree with me on that one, I think.
Yeah.
Especially yourself. I'm sure yourself, you notice it when you're in a classroom. People dictating at you is very irritating. You really achieve nothing from it.
Yeah, and I'm going into fourth year, so it's the first year of the Leaving Cert cycle this year. I have to say I am extremely nervous because I know that this exam is basically going to dictate what courses are available to me in college. It's basically going to dictate what my future is going to be like. And if I don't get a good result in my Leaving Cert, That pretty much means that I am extremely limited to what I can do in college, if I can even go to college at all, what kind of jobs I can get. It's basically one exam, one set of exams dictates what currently dictates what your future is going to be like. I think that is a huge mistake. I mean, people sitting the Leaving Cert are like 17, 18, 19 years of age. That is far too young to be making such a huge, huge decision. But Harry, you were saying that you think that more technology should be brought into the classrooms. Can I focus for a second about just using technology to teach subjects rather than actual technology in the classroom? So do you think that tablets, phones, computers, all that kind of technology is good for teaching people?
Yeah, I think teachers could be a lot more technically advanced in the case right. that they could use a lot more technology. Like every teacher would in theory have a computer in the classroom. They should be able to, you know, show presentations and be able to make it a bit more interactive in that way. They should be able to have a tablet so they can sit at the back of the classroom or stand in the front and, you know, go through their presentation mm-hmm. and point things out. I do think it is, and it needs to be more interactive. But currently, like, we're in 2014 where there's technology everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. Yeah. Everyone has a phone in their pocket, a tablet in their bag, a laptop at home or a computer at home. Why don't we use it in classrooms? Yeah. Why don't we use the technology available to us and such advanced technology available to us in the classroom?
I think that teachers really should embrace technology. Now, we're seeing it more, especially with the younger generation of teachers. They're bringing in their own technology that they would use at home to teach in the classroom. There's a lot more iPads, a lot more Mac computers coming into schools. I know I was part of getting funding for an iMac in my school, and teachers are beginning to embrace it a little bit more. But one of the biggest issues, I think, is just the fact that teachers in training colleges right now get absolutely no education on technology. Teachers who are training in training colleges now, they're still thought using methods that basically have been around for decades. There's no real syllabus there for teaching teachers about technology and how to teach technology or anything like that. I think that is probably the biggest issue right now.
Most definitely. And I think it's, to be honest, and it's something I'm working on mainly now at the moment in the next month or so. I was asked to do the IT system in my school. Year for the whole school, and it's something that I concentrate a lot on now, and I hope that maybe what will come out of it is that we're in talks now currently with a few privatized learning companies mm-hmm. about different ideas, but hopefully that it would get us able to make IT available in every school. And I think it should just be a part of the junior cert, even the junior cert to start with, and then the leaving cert, and that it should be a subject, and then it should be encouraged to use technology in schools as well. So I do think the governments really need to, especially with a new government now in the education system, that there's a new government now and they can take the step to go, well, look, we need technology in education and we need coding and different things like that taught in skills.
Mm. Harry, what's your opinion on students using technology to learn as well, like students using iPads and phones and laptops?
I encourage it, but I think there needs to be a tiny bit of caution as
well. I completely agree with you there. Yeah,
there was all this talk about the whole devices with cameras and different things like mm-hmm. that. I would be cautious. I would be very, very cautious. Now, personally, there's people like yourself and myself, and there's other people I know who wouldn't. They wouldn't take advantage of it and use it for the wrong purpose. But there is the minority who could ruin it for everybody.
Yeah.
And it could be the case of posting pictures up and videos up that are not supposed to be posted up and, you know, just not allowed. But I think there could be the measures and the steps taken. I know my school, myself, there's an IT lab and there's, you know, bug basic computers, but the security on the computers are quite strict in the case that you can't go onto things like Facebook. You can't mm-hmm. access different sites like that. And you can't go onto YouTube. Well, you can go onto YouTube, but only for various things.
Right.
Well, I think the same thing could be done all around the school. So if the kids or the students are allowed to use the Wi-Fi, that there would be some lock or some restriction on it so that they couldn't access certain features. But then also, if their schools are investing in things like tablets and like computers, that they disable the cameras in them and they disable different things, or else that they're constantly being supervised or monitored by teachers. It's something that does need to be worked on. It needs to be perfected, because if it is the case that they try it out or they use it and they go, well, look, we'll learn as we go along, it could become very, very dangerous. And, you know, even though it might be just a phone to somebody or a tablet or a laptop to somebody, somebody else could see it as almost a weapon in the case that they could take advantage of a camera being on it. And you know yourself.
Now, I've had this discussion with my brother on the show about this whole thing with students using technology to learn. And I kind of feel like at the moment it can be a huge, huge distraction for certain students who are already kind of distracted in the classroom as it is with just a piece of like a pen and paper. They're doodling and all that kind of stuff. And it just doesn't work for certain kind of students. And the issue currently is that in primary schools and in secondary schools, that education system has to cater for all types of people, because everybody in Ireland is entitled to a first level and second level education. And it's extremely difficult to be able to try and change that whole structure and the way it works to bring in technology. Now, you were saying about putting limitations on technology and that kind of thing. There's a topic that's coming up quite a lot in the tech news at the moment about something called net neutrality. And it's basically the filtering of certain websites on the internet. And I kind of feel like, now it's not exactly like this, but if teachers and schools decide that they want to filter out websites like Facebook, websites like Twitter, websites like YouTube, that you're getting, what students are getting is a filtered version of the internet. And it's kind of limiting, because I think that social networks, as well as websites like YouTube, can be used in education as well. And do you feel like it's kind of limiting students by blocking all these things, blocking cameras? I mean, all of this stuff can be used in very creative ways in the classroom.
Yeah, most definitely. I understand completely where you're coming from. And to be honest, I understand where you're coming from, and I can understand the other point too. Now, I do think the thing with IT safety, and especially with kids, and it's something that irritates me a lot, was something that was said. I was watching a TV show the other day, a chat show, and it was mentioned about how to turn on settings for your kids and to check phones and computers. Right. There needs to be a certain amount of trust between people.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think this starts at home mainly. Would be if parents have a child with a laptop, and child has a laptop, and they look at it, they should be, in theory, there should be the trust there, so they're given the laptop and they're told the rights and wrongs. But it shouldn't be the case that they're constantly monitoring, that they're being a really, really tight on the whole monitoring and filtering, so that the kids don't get the full possible opportunities and that they take advantage of it. But I think that mainly they should have the opportunity, and then if something does come, then you get all strict on the settings and privacy.
Yeah.
But in schools, I do think social media, and I know yourself, like you use Twitter a lot, I'm sure, and Facebook and all that. And me, myself, I use Twitter every single second day. Mm-hmm. I constantly have it on. And I even with this Digital Youth Council thing, I was up last night and I was doing Instagram and I was doing YouTube.
I saw that,
loads of different things for it to try make sure that it's socially active as possible.
Yeah.
And teenagers and young kids are socially active online. And I don't think they should be restricting some sites. I do think Facebook. I don't think there'd be any use for Facebook in the classroom, personally.
Well, yeah, I think that's true, yeah.
YouTube definitely can be used.
Absolutely, yeah. It's such a powerful
tool. Most definitely. It is. It's so useful. And different sites. Like Instagram, I'm not sure. Snapchat, I would be very cautious about. Twitter, I don't see any problems with Twitter personally. No. Now, maybe that's because I am the number one Twitter fan. Maybe that's just me. But I think Twitter is useful in the way
that
if you're in the classroom and you need information for somebody, you can contact anybody around the world using Twitter. You tweet some celebrity or anybody, and most of them are very helpful. But I do understand what you're saying, filtering different things out and not getting the full experience.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there is definitely something out there, or there's definitely somebody out there who can build something that can make sure that they're safe as possible if they're using these sites.
Yeah.
That they might be able to search information but not post different things. But I definitely think for the trial basis, if they're doing it on a trial basis, they should probably filter out the sites and then within time find ways to add these sites in so that we can get the full experience of the internet while you're in school.
Right. Yeah, because currently there's a web filter in my school. I don't know if it's probably the same web filter that's in all schools in Ireland. But the biggest problem is if it recognizes a new site, the site is blocked by default. So, for example, my website, talksabouttech.com, is blocked on the school's filtering system. I think the current filtering system that is there is way, way, way too strict. It's blocking pretty much everything unless it's told not to block it. That basically defeats, in my opinion, a lot of what the internet is so powerful for, and that is just the fact that you have access to all of this stuff. All of the stuff that you can learn from and interact with. And if you're just blocking it and filtering out and basically just allowing a few sites that they think are suitable, I think it's very, very limiting. I hope that if in the future that filtering system is definitely just gotten rid of and they come up with a new solution for. Really, I think what the filtering should do is just filter out seriously inappropriate sites, as well as very distracting sites such as Facebook.
Keywords. It should be keywords rather than actual sites. So they shouldn't be allowed to search different words.
Yeah, I agree.
So if you're searching a site or a site comes up with a certain word, like, there's no reason. Like, you know, it's a bit ridiculous that you can't actually search your own website in school and that it wouldn't come up. Like, I don't think there's any hardcore stuff or anything wrong with the website
Absolutely not.
So I don't think the fiddler should be doing anything like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. You're most definitely right. And now I haven't actually noticed it in my school one. It probably is the same, though. Mm. I'm sure, as you know yourself, you get limited access to an IT room in a school anyway.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely, there should be the case. But as you said about students being distracted as well, to come back to that point, I noticed in my class, when we do our courses, we use this thing called TeamViewer.
Yeah, I know TeamViewer.
TeamViewer is very, very handy. If I'm talking to a classroom, so I'm standing in front of a classroom to tell them something or give them a point or something like that, I lock all the computers.
That's great.
I have a lock mode. So what happens is I put it on every computer before they come. So it's mandatory that every computer must have TeamViewer on it. I download everyone and I have their codes for their computers. And I can look at what they're doing at all times on my computer. And I can pause their computers. I can lock their computers. I can even take access of their computer and look through anything I want on it. And I think that would definitely be something that can be used. TeamViewer, you can buy a pro version of it. I use the free version personally. Mm-hmm. But the pro version, and you could take, every teacher could have access to the computers. If they belong by the school, then you can have it on so that every teacher, if the student comes in and the teacher's at the top of the classroom talking, and the student shouldn't have access to it, they can lock the computer or they can turn it off and they can see what they're doing. But I think there's definitely a way around that. But as you said about the restricted internet and what you said about the searching, that's wrong. That shouldn't be allowed. I think everybody should be entitled to discover new sites and new places to find information, and not that every time you find something new that it'd be blocked.
Absolutely. So, Harry, is this something that you will be bringing up with the Digital Youth Council? Because I think that's definitely a topic that would be a great topic of discussion.
Most definitely, yeah. And I'll be looking for views now off everybody. So anyone who's watching, as I said, we're on Twitter. So it's DYC2014 on Twitter. But that's perfect. What we're encouraging anybody who has any information or anything, any views or opinions, to just email them over, tweet us, or anything at all. And I think that would be the best thing that comes out of this, is that everyone is entitled to share their opinions and views. And if the same opinion or view comes up 20 or 30 times, or even 2 or 3 times, it should be looked at, because it's obviously important to not just one person, but to everyone.
Great. Thank you, Harry, very much for joining me for this episode. Thank you very much for taking time out of your extremely busy schedule to do this interview. I had a great time talking to you, and we've gone, I was expecting a 20 to 30 minute interview. It's now nearly 50 minutes. So we had a great time discussing different things about technology and education. Harry, before you go, can you tell people listening right now where they can go to follow Kid Tech and Digital Youth Council and what you do?
Kid Tech, you can find us at Kid Tech Courses on Twitter, and you can find the Digital Youth Council on Twitter, Instagram, Vimeo, YouTube,
everywhere.
Just Digital Youth Council, search it anywhere, I'm sure you'll find it somewhere. It's at DYC2014, the Twitter handle is.
Cool. Harry, thank you very much again for joining me for this episode, and hopefully we'll be talking to you again in the future. All right, so that pretty much wraps it up for this week's episode of Talks About Tech Weekly. I thoroughly enjoyed the interview with Harry McCann. Harry's just such a nice guy, and he's a really, really interesting guy to talk to, and I hope you enjoyed that interview too, because I know I did. So yeah, that pretty much wraps it up for this week's episode. My name is Michael McAndrew. You can follow me on Twitter, TalksAboutTech1. You can also send me an email, michael@talksabouttech.com, if you have anything you want to contact me about. And you can also find the show notes for this episode at talksabouttech.com/TATweekly/109. I'll have full show notes over there about everything we were talking about during the interview with Harry. So I think I'm going to leave it there for this week. Everybody, thank you very much for tuning in. And talk to you next week. All right, goodbye.